You're listening to NALP Talk, and my name is Scott Love, your host. Thanks for joining us on another episode of the show. This episode, we'll be focusing on the new research study and report on lawyer mental health and well-being. This study is a joint research project of Krill Strategies with Patrick Krill, JC Coaching and Consulting with Jordana Confino, and Ambition Profile in collaboration with NALP. We'll be hearing from Jordan and Patrick later on. Jordan Confino is an attorney, certified professional coach, and founder of JC Coaching and Consulting, a company devoted to helping lawyers and other high-achieving professionals enjoy greater satisfaction and sustainable success in their lives and work. She's also an adjunct professor at Fordham Law School, where she previously served as the assistant dean of professionalism. Patrick Krill is a lawyer, licensed and board-certified addiction counselor and researcher who has initiated and helped lead many of the legal profession's efforts to improve mental health. He's the founder of Krill Strategies, where he serves as a trusted advisor and go-to educator for discerning legal employers around the globe. Before we hear from Jordana and Patrick, let's first hear from Nikaya Gray with an important calendar update of events. Thanks for listening. Hi, Nikaya. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Tell us, what's on the agenda in terms of upcoming events and things people should be mindful of related to NALP?
Yeah, thanks, Scott. So there are a few things that I want to highlight for our listeners. First, you know, we just finished up our planning meeting for PDI conference in December, and I am so excited for this. The programming at PDI is always exceptional, but this year is going to be particularly strong. We had almost 200 proposals for programming, which is fantastic. And we could only choose 32 of them. So it was a very, very, very difficult decision, but the planning team did a great job. And I think they put together another outstanding conference program. So I definitely encourage everyone to mark their calendars for that PDI conference. It's going to be December 4th and 5th in Washington, D.C. And the registration for that will open in September, right after Labor Day. And then the other thing I want to highlight for our listeners is that NALP's selected findings on the employment outcomes for the class of 2024 will be released on July 31st. As part of that, we'll be hosting a members-only webinar on July 31st, where I'll be joined by Danielle Taylor and Oksana Poulos from NALP's research team. And we'll be reviewing things like how the class of 2024 did compared to prior classes, what trends we're seeing for the future, and all sorts of different data. So I encourage all of our members to attend if they can. And I will say that if they can't, we do record that one and it will be available for on-demand viewing on our website. So lots of exciting things coming up.
That does sound exciting. Thank you so much for sharing that, Nikaya. Jordana Confino is an attorney, certified professional coach, and founder of JC Coaching and Consulting, a company devoted to helping lawyers and other high-achieving professionals enjoy greater satisfaction and sustainable success in their lives and work. She's also an adjunct professor at Fordham Law School, where she previously served as the assistant dean of professionalism. Patrick Krill is a lawyer, licensed and board-certified addiction counselor and researcher who has initiated and helped lead many of the legal profession's efforts to improve mental health. He is the founder of Krill Strategies, where he serves as a trusted advisor and go-to educator for discerning legal employers around the globe. Thank you both for joining me today.
Thank you, Scott. It's great to be here.
That's great.
Thank you.
And so I wanted to ask you, and we were talking about the study that was the report on lawyer mental health and well-being, a joint research project of Krill Strategies, JC Coaching and Consulting, and Ambition Profiling in collaboration with NALP. And we're going to put that link on the show notes wherever you listen to this show. Go there and you'll be able to get that report directly. But let me start with you, Jordana. I'm kind of curious, what was your interest in why you wanted to do this study?
Yeah, well, my interest in this is, I will admit, deeply personal at the start. So the way that I got into doing all of this work is I'm a recovering lawyer and a recovering perfectionist, and ended up working as a coach for lawyers pretty much to help teach other people all of the things that I wish I had learned, not the very, very hard way when I was practicing law myself. And I started out with my coaching really focusing more broadly on supporting lawyers with well-being and professional development. But I quickly realized that there was this underlying thing contributing to so many of the struggles that they were experiencing, and that was maladaptive perfectionism. And I realized that, as was the case with my own situation, if they didn't open themselves to addressing this underlying contributing factor, they could make a million external traditional changes and deploy different strategies to enhance their well-being or their performance, but they weren't going to have the results that they want because there was still going to be this deeper issue. And this made sense to me because there's a ton of research out there among non-lawyer populations linking perfectionism to well-being and performance challenges. But up until this point, there was no research specifically among lawyers. And knowing the skeptical nature of the profession and the extent to which we've all been glorifying perfectionism for basically ever, I knew that in order to really get buy-in among more lawyers and law firm and law school leaders, especially the ones that really need to be learning and implementing these lessons the most, we needed to get lawyer-specific data showing that, no, we are not the exception to this. And actually, perfectionism is causing real harm, even in the legal profession. And there's something that we can and should be doing about it.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Jordan. I think that's a really good perspective and a really good goal for you also. And Patrick, I like the fact that you have a different perspective. What was your motivation about why you're interested in researching lawyer perfectionism?
Well, it was really twofold. Part of what I do professionally is research. I'm a lawyer addiction counselor, but I'm also a researcher. I've published several studies related to lawyer mental health and well-being. I have another large study that's actually just launching this week, but this was an area that I had not explored. And as Jordana correctly noted, data didn't exist to inform this discussion to help us understand the relationship between some lawyer traits like perfectionism and their mental health and well-being. But the second reason was that I had a lot of anecdotal evidence and observational evidence that this was a big challenge. Prior to doing what I do now, working as an advisor to law firms, I was the director of a treatment program for lawyers and judges and law students at Hazel and Betty Ford. And the program was for legal professionals who were struggling with addiction and mental health problems. We asked all of those patients to identify their own traits and behaviors that they thought contributed to their poor well-being, their excessive stress, et cetera. And I actually have a slide that I often use in presentations outlining traits of lawyers that can amount to risk factors for mental health problems. Many of those lawyers cited perfectionistic tendencies. They sort of saw that in themselves. But we didn't have any research that would validate or verify that. When the opportunity arose to partner with Naupin to do this research, obviously it was a great interest to me.
That's great. I like the fact that you have that perspective. Both of you look at it from different angles, but you want to help and you have good insight that can help people. So let's kind of dig into that a little bit. And Jordana, let me come back to you. What do you think are the key factors that drive lawyers to be perfectionistic? Is it primarily the nature of the work, the culture of the profession, or something else?
Oh, as I look out my window at the storm cloud right now, I think it's really the perfect storm of factors because it's the culture. It's the nature of the work. And I think that lawyers also have a number of personalities, traits that make them predisposed to perfectionism. And so it's really all of these coming in simultaneously and mutually reinforcing and basically revving it up. With respect to the cultural and the systemic aspects of the profession, I mean, like I said before, we're operating in a profession that is long glorified and downright required it. So lawyers go to work and they're told you can't make mistakes. Everything needs to be perfect. And this makes sense given now tying it to the nature of the work where precision is paramount. The presence or absence of a comma literally can make or break a case. And so we really meticulous attention to detail and high standards and excellence and drive, all of these things really are necessary in order to most effectively advocate for our clients and do the best work. And so there are these contributing factors. I think the nature of the work, that is really legitimate. I think the aspect of the culture is where we move from the nature of the work. And that's where I would say the problematic interpretation comes in, because I feel like much of the profession has taken the fact that this work is really important and precision is really important and taken it to mean, well, we need to have this sort of fear and pressure approach to ensuring that everything is always perfect and there are never mistakes, which is not possible. And so there, I think, are the environmental factors. And then there are also just a number of individual factors. So type A personalities often go to law school. In law school, there is a fixed mindset that is deeply reinforced, a negativity bias that is deeply reinforced. All of those characteristics also make individuals in the legal profession, I think, especially susceptible. But there's definitely these external pressures going on simultaneously.
That's a lot. It's almost like three-dimensional chess of all these bad things that converge into something even worse, you know? And Patrick, what can you add to that? What do you think are the key factors that drive lawyers to be perfectionistic based on your perspective and what you've seen?
Well, I agree with everything that Jordan has said. I would zoom out a little bit further and say that underlying a lot of it is really, and Jordana used this word, it's fear. It's a fear-based mindset. There's a lot of research into the association between fear and maladaptive perfectionism, whether that's fear of failure, fear of judgment, fear of letting others down, you know, kind of people-pleasing tendencies. But, you know, if you're a lawyer who has that fear-based orientation, and as Jordana was suggesting, law school can really amplify that, right? We're always thinking about, and we're trained to issue spot and look for things that can go wrong. And if you're maybe a little bit of a fear-based person innately, or that's just the way that you're wired, I think it really is fertile ground for maladaptive perfectionism to really take root and flourish. And so, you know, if someone is working in an environment, and we've all probably, if not worked in, we've known people who have worked in fear-based cultures or fear-based organizations, and it's just generally less healthy, and it opens the door to a lot of dysfunction and maladaptive behaviors. So if somebody finds themselves kind of in that environment and they struggle with maladaptive perfectionism already, I think it's important to recognize maybe this environment isn't suiting me particularly well or enabling me to do my best work.
Yeah. I just want to jump off of something that Patrick said, because I realized that we didn't explicitly say this here. And before anyone turns this off and says, but I need to have high standards because the work really needs to be good, I just want to complete the thought of what Patrick was saying, which is that perfectionism is different from commitment to excellence. And so when we talk about maladaptive perfectionism, we're distinguishing that from the high standards and really trying to do the best possible work. And it's exactly what Patrick was saying. It's that fear and shame and pressure-based approach. There's actually a different approach to be getting at and pursuing the same standards and the same goals without that fear. And the reason that I'm dispelling this out is because that did not make sense to me. That had never occurred to me. Like, I thought for most of my life that if I'm trying to pursue excellence, fear and pressure is the only way to do it. And if I'm taking away that fear and pressure, it means that I'm becoming complacent and not striving for excellence. And I think one of the most important points of this report is that you can still strive for excellence, but you can do it in a values-based way where you're motivating yourself with something other than fear or shame. And it's, you know, desiring a positive outcome, not fear of retribution or feeling like a failure that's getting you to do it. And I think that is just a really novel concept for people who immediately hear, oh, they want me to lower my standards. I can't do that. So, you know, next in the playlist.
I appreciate you anchoring that in our conversation, Jordana. I think that's insightful and it's really helpful. And it kind of takes pressure off where people can achieve at a high level, but they don't have to feel all the things you mentioned. And Jordana, let me come to you, and then I want to hear your perspective on this, Patrick. You mentioned this a little earlier, Jordana. You talked about law schools. How do you think the legal education system contributes to perfectionism among lawyers. And you think that the law schools foster this trait. What do you think about that, Jordana?
I do. And it hurts my heart a little bit because I don't think it's necessary. And I don't see it going anywhere anytime soon. It's kind of like the billable hour, right? But I think that slowly there are things that we can do, because I think a big issue with law school is the curve, first of all, just the zero sum mentality where students are constantly pitted against one another. And if someone else does well, it means I'm not doing well and I am really defined by this grade. But I think more problematic than that, and something that actually can be changed, is the way that law school really ingrains the fixed mindset, which I think is very much at the core of maladaptive perfectionism. Because fixed mindset means we believe that our skills and abilities are really fixed and we can't meaningfully change them, which is why we have such a perceived need to do everything perfectly immediately. Otherwise, it must mean that we're inadequate and not good enough. And what this means is that there's no room for growth. Everyone's just trying to perform and look smart and look capable. And I think law schools really reinforce this because the primary means of assessment in law school is one grade at the end of the semester. There's almost 99% of the time, there's no feedback on it. So it's almost like do your best and then this is what you get. And that GPA is going to define you, as opposed to do work, get feedback, try to learn from it. And that is much more like what the working world actually is, where you're not turning in this perfect finished product 90% of the time, but rather what you're turning in is something, and then you get feedback, and then you're learning as you're going. And I think that no one really explains that to law students, that the working world, especially when you go into a new position or you're promoted to a new position, no one's giving you the instruction manual that you're going to study and then try to ace the test. There's going to be so much learning by fire. And the problem with fixed mindset is that we think that if we're getting feedback or making mistakes, it means we're broken. So people will shy away from doing new and challenging things that are actually necessary to perform at such a higher level. And so I think that is a huge, huge disservice that law schools do to law students.
And Patrick, what's your perspective on that?
Well, I do think that maladaptive perfectionism can flourish in the law school environment for sure. So as I mentioned a few minutes ago, there is a relationship between maladaptive perfectionism and fear, right? A lot of research into that. There's also a very strong relationship or association between maladaptive perfectionism and low self-esteem. And law school has not historically been known as a boon to self-esteem, right? So Jordana was mentioning the curve and the pressure that exists. And maybe I'm thinking of my torts class where the professor was really into the Socratic method and maybe not making people feel good about themselves at the end of that exercise. And I think that there are a lot of aspects of that experience and of that training that can maybe be threatening to someone's self-esteem, which is then going to fuel that maladaptive perfectionism. But lawyers, law students overall, tend to over-identify with their professional self, right? A lot of their worth is based on their professional accomplishments, their professional achievements. That often starts in that law school experience. Maybe it starts before the law school experience as they were working to get the grades and scores that would enable them to enter law school. But that's a recipe for a lot of problems and a lack of well-being when someone invests or they derive too much of their personal worth as a human being from their professional identity and accomplishments. And so if there are things that could be done in the law school experience, interventions that could be tried to help people develop a more well-rounded sense of self and professional identity, and to sort of step back from that over-identification with performance, I think that could help, right? So we haven't talked about this, and maybe we're about to, but the maladaptive perfectionism does not exist in a vacuum, right? Our research showed that it is closely associated with all sorts of mental health problems, right? Depression, anxiety, stress, burnout. And so it's really essential that we understand the mechanisms and interactions of some of these dispositions and traits, because it's not just someone's exhibiting high levels of maladaptive perfectionism. It's what that is leading to that I think is the most important part of this.
I just want to add again, because I feel like I'm always thinking about how do I appeal to the people that don't even care about our mental health and well-being? I so deeply care. But even if you don't, the study, again, it's not even just linked to the depression and the extreme stress and the susceptibility to burnout, workaholism. It's also linked to all of these problematic professional behaviors. So greater difficulty prioritizing and time management struggles and greater difficulty both giving and receiving feedback and shorter longevity in their law firm jobs and greater intention to quit. So not only is this a major risk factor for well-being, it's also a major impediment to professional development, which means that the antidotes to perfectionism should be being taught in law schools as core professional competencies that are going to empower law students to perform most effectively as lawyers over the long term. And very, 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 very slowly, we're starting to see more of this in law school. So this is an example. Like, I teach this in my positive lawyering course, and with the most recent ABA change in regulations for law schools, the accreditation standards, they're asking for lessons on professional identity formation. So we're seeing a little bit more of this, but like, we need this baked into the law school curriculum, just like we have skills like legal writing and other things built in.
Well, hopefully someday that will change. And I think this is part of that process of evolution. And let me kind of bring it to present day. An attorney is in a big firm, medium firm, small firm. He or she is feeling that pressure. Patrick, let me ask you this. What would be some strategies that you found helpful for an attorney to manage that perfectionism that they have and how it impacts their mental health?
Well, first of all, self-awareness is key, right? And for many lawyers, they find themselves working so hard, thinking about everything other than their own health and well-being. And so it's really important to be aware of your own internal warning lights, to acknowledge those internal warning lights, not dismiss them, and having some self-awareness around how you're feeling, how that's manifesting, how that's impacting you maybe professionally in terms of your performance, I think is step one. If you do notice that maybe you are experiencing some mental health distress or your performance is suffering, you're having that difficulty delegating, for example, as a result of some perfectionistic tendencies, don't try to solve that problem on your own. Yes, it would be helpful to kind of learn about and educate yourself about this topic, but getting some coaching, getting some counseling, some therapy can be really helpful. So for a lot of people, cognitive behavioral therapy is helpful in terms of reframing thoughts that are not particularly helpful, reframing thoughts that are maybe undermining someone's well-being, challenging automatic negative thoughts or cognitive distortions that can often accompany depression. They can often accompany anxiety. They can often accompany the catastrophizing that might go along with perfectionism, maladaptive perfectionism. And so, you know, whether that's just taking advantage of some resources that maybe your firm offers, an EAP, a counseling service, access to coaching, talking with someone about what you are feeling, how it's impacting you, and helping them or allowing them to help you rather to develop some tools and some strategies to offset some of those thought patterns. I think it's really important to emphasize these are solvable problems. People can find themselves in a state of hopelessness and overwhelm and frustration that can be paralyzing. It can really immobilize them. But whether you're talking about depression, anxiety, burnout, just dealing with maladaptive thought patterns like maladaptive perfectionism, these are problems for which solutions exist. And so I want anyone hearing this or anyone who might be experiencing these challenges themselves to have some hope and to recognize that there are things that they can do and resources that they can bring to bear to help them get to a better place. And so I think, you know, when you have that self-awareness, you know there are tools and resources available to help you. The step that's kind of in between is just reaching out and taking advantage of those tools and resources and asking for that help.
That's terrific, Patrick. How about you, Jordana, from your perspective of coaching people, what are some strategies you've seen that have helped people manage this?
Yeah, first of all, I was going to say I love everything that Patrick just said, and I couldn't agree more. I think that there's two big hurdles that struggling perfectionists need to scale in order to change their experience for the better. And one is wanting to change. And so recognizing that as much as you feel like your perfectionism is necessary in helping you, it's actually not. And you can keep all of the positive things that are driving you forward without that fear and shame that's holding you back in so many different ways. So that's step one. And if you want to understand more about why and how, read the report. And then step two is believing that you can change. And I remember there was a multi-year period in my own journey where I thought that I was just spoiled goods because I understood, and I actually used that word with my own coach at the time, because I realized, I finally understood how harmful my own perfectionism was, but I just felt that it was so deeply ingrained that there was no possibility that I could change it. Mm-hmm. And so again, like Patrick said, that's not true. And neuroplasticity research shows that we can literally rewire our brain through exercises like the ones that Patrick mentioned in a way that changes our relationship with that fierce inner critic and drill sergeant in our mind. And I truly believe that if I could make progress in this area, anyone can, because my inner critic was so out there. And so I just want to reinforce that point. And I think cultivating self-compassion, which is learning how to treat yourself with the same kindness and encouragement that you would show a friend, is one of the strongest ways to pull power away from that toxic voice inside your head. So unfortunately, there's no exercise or pill that will just make that critic go away entirely. If there is, I haven't heard of it, but we can grow this compassionate voice, even if that's the most far-fetched notion in your head right now, through deliberate practice. And there is a strong body of research showing that self-compassion does not make us weak, lazy, complacent, as many of us assume it will, but actually turbocharges growth, development, performance in a whole range of contexts. So this is a skill that you can actually practice. And I always tell everyone I speak with, if I could only give you one strategy, it would be cultivating self-compassion, because I really think it's that powerful and underlies everything else that you might want to do. The other thing that I would say is, it's not just the environment. The environment can absolutely be like pouring fuel on the fire, but we internalize toxic perfectionism. And some of us grew up with it and had it before we come in. So it's absolutely worse if you're in a place that encourages it and requires it. But leaving one of those places isn't necessarily enough to address it. And so I know this because I moved from law to working in a law school where I wasn't being pressured externally in the same ways, but I was still had that vicious critic and drill sergeant in my own head. And so I still kept running myself into the ground. So that's the other thing that I encourage you, even if you're thinking about, okay, I want to leave the toxic environment and do whatever, still think about practicing self-compassion and doing those other types of exercises. And the last thing I will say is, if you are working in an environment where you're like, I just need to do all of the things and it needs to be perfect. I would say just open your eyes to the reality that it is impossible to do everything perfectly simultaneously when there's more work that could possibly be done perfectly. So rather than striving for perfectionism, doing it all at once, perfectly, I like to think of a concept of big picture perfection seeking. So what's the best possible thing that you could actually accomplish in these given circumstances? And then allowing yourself to actually think intentionally about which corners do I have to cut intentionally, or which things do I have to say no to, even if that might disappoint someone, in order to avoid a bigger disappointment of vastly overextending and not being able to deliver. Because I think going back to the culture, we're told always say yes and always do something perfectly and promptly, but that is just not possible. And I think that perfectionists convince themselves that it should be possible as long as they work hard enough. And it's not possible, it means they're not good enough. And it's not possible because it's not possible. So I think accepting that fact and then trying to intentionally reach the best outcome, as opposed to the default imperfect outcome is might be a helpful strategy.
Absolutely right. And as we bring this to a close, I've got one final question for both of you. We'll start with you, Jordana. What surprised you the most in doing your research in writing of this report?
Honestly, I think there was only one thing that surprised me because it surprised me a little bit just how strong the correlations were between perfectionism and all of the most, I would say 99% of the negative factors that we were measuring. So in terms of both performance and mental health, that was just really confirmed what I was expecting though. The one thing that surprised me, and I think Patrick will be much better to surmise about this than I am because he really specializes in this, is that we did not see a connection between substance use challenges and perfectionism. So we saw a link between perfectionism and basically every other negative mental health and performance-based metric that we were looking at, but not that. And so that was surprising to me, especially given what Patrick had said about, you know, anecdotal experiences. I'd be fascinated to learn more about that and hope this is the first of many studies in this area for multiple reasons.
Right. How about you, Patrick?
Yeah, so building on what Jordana said, we saw a weak or really inconclusive relationship between those who were scoring high on maladaptive perfectionism and those who were scoring high on the hazardous drinking scale. And so that is a little bit surprising because my prior research, as well as a wealth of other research, shows that the number one reason many lawyers turn to alcohol is to manage stress or to deal with negative affect. And so you would have expected a little bit more of a relationship there. But this was a pilot study, and I think it really underscores the need to research this matter further. But what I would say generally is just kind of a concluding thought. And it's really also touching on what Jordana was saying about, you know, it's not just the work environment. I would encourage anyone who is listening to this discussion with interest, maybe personal interest related to their own health and well-being, to recognize that it's not just the environment. It's that concept of wherever you go, there you are, right? In the realm of addiction treatment, we often refer to it as people attempting a geographic cure. Well, if I move or if I change my job, I'm sure my drinking problem will go away. And we know that oftentimes we do have to address those interpersonal behaviors and those sort of challenges and traits and behaviors. And so focusing on yourself, but also having some awareness of your work environment and how that is influencing your mental health and well-being, I really think is essential. And finally, take the long view. Right. If you take the long view of your career and of your work, I think it can be an effective antidote to some of those, you know, very critical, overly critical thoughts that can pop up for someone experiencing maladaptive perfectionism. And often we're focused on short-term results and short-term outcomes in our career. When you take the long view, it can help us, you know, step away from some of that stress and pressure.
Well, thank you, Patrick. And thank you, Jordana. And to everybody listening, make sure you read the report if you haven't already. It's insightful with some very important information that I think will help you and your colleagues. And Jordana, Patrick, thank you for being here today on MALP Talk.
Thank you so much, Scott. This was a pleasure.
Thank you both. This is wonderful.